Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to the show. 3 minutes past four. Committed to standing out from the crowd, jumping in your next Mini at Berwick Mini Garage. A whole lot of us read this story the other day, and I think we all read it about the same time, about the Melbourne Knights deciding that they put a line in the sand, that they're not interested now or in the near future.
That was a shock, because this is a team with a lot of history.
Powerful heritage, yes. NBA, National League, Victorian Football Club. Saying that we have no intentions at any stage of putting a hand up to become part of this national second tier competition, which I think we're all incredibly excited about. Mm-hmm. But the idea for those of us who are outside the game, see the possibilities of all of this, the prospect maybe of at some stage there being promotion relegation into and out of the A-League, being a really fascinating thing and a really important thing within football in Australia. But Simon Pinchich is the president of Melbourne Knights, and he came out and said, nah, it's not going to work. There are so many elements of this that are of concern to us. And he's been good enough to join us on the show to outline those concerns and give us his views. Good afternoon to you, Simon.
Good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, Daisy. Thanks for having me on today.
Why would you... This seems like a fairly kind of remarkable step to take for a club like yours, which has been part of, you know, the landscape of Australian football for generations now. For you to come out and say that we're not interested in being part of this, and we've got real concerns that this thing can be viable. Where are those concerns coming from?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's a bit of a delicate one where we are down to a certain level of confidentiality, so we can't go into too much detail.
Okay.
Those reasons, which I can understand would be quite frustrating for a lot of people, because there's a couple of times now we've kind of put out a bit of a statement, which is very vague, not by choice. We'd love to share a lot of those details. But in a nutshell, it's something that we're really excited about as well. Something we've been campaigning for quite a number of years. Something we've been integral in the push for to get off the ground. Kind of got shaped, and everyone had a rough idea of how it would look. Then it was presented. Bit of a shock for us. No scope to essentially discuss and potentially change any parts of that criteria. Just a matter of kind of take it or leave it. And for our liking, there's just way too much information that is missing for us to be comfortable to say, yeah, look, we're prepared to commit to this financially and go through with it.
And, well, let's take a hypothetical then. If you were going to put together this second-tier competition, if you've all of a sudden were given the full power, what is it that you think are the non-negotiables for that second tier to go ahead?
I think the first one is just the time of year it's played. So to make it a winter competition where we have to go up against the AFL, we have to go up against the NRL, we have to go up against every other division of football in Australia, including our own junior teams and our local clubs, not to mention how horrible the conditions can be to watch a sporting match in the middle of winter.
Yep.
So the only football competition we don't clash with then would be the A-League. And for a club like ours, that can make a massive difference in our revenue. So, for example, if we are, you know, playing in the middle of winter and, we'll say, a broadcast deal gets done and they start dictating, okay, you are playing your matches a certain day and a certain time of the week, which doesn't work with our supporter base and our local community, compared to if we're playing in summer and we choose our fixtures, we've shown as recently as the end of last year in our cup game that we can draw 5,000 spectators to a game at our stadium. So that compared to conditions where we're competing against too many other matches and competitions in a dead of winter could mean the difference of hundreds of thousands of dollars of revenue per season for us.
Why wouldn't it, Simon, why wouldn't it coincide, run parallel to the A-League?
It's something I'd like to know, and unfortunately I can't give you an answer for.
And well, so that seemed, that would seem to me to be, if this thing's going to
evolve... Hang on, Energy, because I use the comparison to what it is with basketball, where they are played separately.
Yeah.
Now, I know it's a different... There are other different pressures, but one advantage of what I assume they're proposing is you played in the winter, is then potentially don't you have the possibility of having a lot of those A-League players playing in your league and therefore being more of a competitor to the A-League?
Not necessarily, because a lot of those A-League players will be professionally contracted, so they're, you know, they'll have multi-year contracts, so in the off-season they won't have that opportunity. And even if so, there would be probably slight overlaps in the season start and end dates, so they'd be clashing with their commitments to their A-League club.
Well, they do in other sports. I know for basketball, they do.
Yeah, it's like, but football codes, with all due respect to basketball, I mean, basketball doesn't really have an off-season, whereas football...
Well, it does,
football
but...
Football leagues do have off-seasons. Don't they? So
yeah, I know. I'm just saying that there would. I just assumed that it would be similar. That you'd have the chance to have those players playing. But do you think now with teams like yourself, is this all in place? They've had their tender process. Is it going to go ahead?
I couldn't say. Personally, I'm not confident in it. And as recently as in the last week, I've had one of the 8 founding clubs tell me that they're having second thoughts and they're considering pulling out. I think it's still too early to tell, and it'll depend on what pans out in the next few months and what sort of information comes out with regards to any broadcast deals or league sponsorship and that sort of thing.
Simon, one of the things that we were excited about when we first heard of this proposal was the fact that we might get ultimately a promotion relegation system into and out of the A-League. So we start to build a model that exists in all the major leagues around the world and seems to work and has worked for in some cases, hundreds of years or 100 years plus in some countries around the world. Is it your view that that would ever be considered in Australia?
I think it needs to be. Even for ourselves, like, it'd be all great and well playing in the second division, but we've always got aspirations to be
of course
in this country. So yeah. We've been there. We've been back-to-back national champions. We want to get back to the top. It's obviously disappointing that we can't, but yeah, we need that link from top to bottom, I think, where clubs have that aspirations. And it's not just for players and clubs, but, you know, also coaches to move up and down and progress their careers. And just to bring a bit of life back even to the A-League, where rather than at the end of the season where 2 clubs near the bottom have got nothing to play for, if they're playing, it's a bottom 2, last game of the year, and the winner survives and the loser gets relegated, that's a sold out game.
Huge.
A lot of emotion online. It just lifts the game generally.
Yeah, agree.
What's your understanding of the state of the A-League? Because Andy and I are here with our various contacts that we get some information, but you don't know how accurate it may be. But some of the feedback is it's very bleak with a lot of the teams. We know the Newcastle franchise it's going to be tough to see how that all pans out. But what's your view of the overall economic viability and sustainability of the A-League?
Yeah, I think I'll probably get my mail from the same source that you guys do, where it's nothing's concrete, but I'm getting much of the same sort of information. And in my opinion, it doesn't look good at the moment. It doesn't look like the interest levels, investment in the A-League at the moment are where they have been before and where they probably should be. I don't know where they go to from here. They've obviously got some issues, not just with their clubs, but, you know, decisions they made with trying to move the grand finals to Sydney, issues that they've had ongoing with their active support at all the clubs. So I'm not sure where they go to there. But I think A-League not being in a strong position and not being, I guess, attractive to corporate investment hurts the potential for the second division, because I think the stronger that support is for the A-League, naturally flow on to a second division and bring that sort of support through there as well.
And how does that translate into a team and an organisation like the Melbourne Knights? If the A-League is not necessarily flying along as you'd like, does that filter down to your club as well in that whole pyramid process that most sporting organisations work with?
I think given that we're so far separated from them, it doesn't. If we're in a national second competition, it potentially would. But I think people have 2 views on that. Some people look at A-League not being in a good spot as a bad thing, which I think is the case. I think the stronger it can be, the better it is for everyone. But others will look at it as, oh, you know what? They're not doing the best at the moment. And perhaps if the second division goes really well, we can take their spot as the top tier. So, I think people look at it both ways.
So we're talking to Simon Pinchich, Melbourne Knights president. What would that look like from a TV perspective, Simon? You know, we've got this magnificent rectangular stadium in Melbourne, and we've got big stadiums around Australia. From a TV perspective, you know, that's what you want to have if you're a broadcaster, and you want full stands in these big stadiums around the place. We know what the Australian Cup looks like, and it's fantastic when you get, you know, second and third division clubs in Australia hosting, you know, a Melbourne Victory or whatever it might be, and you can see the barbecue in the background, and there's blokes standing in the terraces and all that. But if it was to be this second tier becoming the kind of de facto national competition, if the A-League fell over, from a TV perspective, what would that actually look like? Would you be playing at your traditional suburban venues?
We're fortunate enough where we would. So we own our own stadium. We've put a lot of investment into it over the years, and we're lucky enough that ours actually looks quite well being broadcast.
Yep.
Eventually, some of the other clubs that have put their hand up for this second division, that's not the case for them. But I think definitely would have to make sure that everyone has the suitable facilities, and that while we don't need, you know, we don't need 20,000 30-seat stadiums, we need this competition boutique stadiums where if you've got a packed out crowd of 3,000 to 5,000, it's going to look, feel and sound great both at the venue and on the broadcast.
And the ultimately clubs like yours want to win titles, right? But we need clubs in Australia developing talent so that we can continue to be, you know, in the women's game are flying along at the moment. In the men's game, we need players to be developed to be of international standard. If they're in the minds of many, it would be seen as a step backwards if the A-League collapsed and we went back to, you know, these clubs that we once had in the National Premier League. But are you confident that we would still attract the sort of talent that we need to attract to produce world-class players?
Yeah, I think we could. I think for anyone to suggest that if we went back to, I guess, the old days, it would go worse. I'd argue quite heavily that for 20 to 30 years ago, my club produced better players than the current crop in our league doing. Yep. If you look at where some of them went overseas and forged, you know, magnificent careers, and we've got an endless list of players that we've developed for the Socceroos, I don't think that would be too much of a concern, player development-wise, if the A-League disappeared, to be honest.
Okay.
Gee. Simon, one of the things that whenever we talk about the grassroots of soccer here in Australia, or football, apologies if there's any offence taken there, but what is the overwhelming feedback we get from callers and off our temper text machine is just the cost. The cost associated with young players playing football is pricing a lot of people out of it.
It's a challenge.
Is that your experience?
It can be the case, and we've had quite a number of. We still do at the moment. Most years we'll have players that are quite talented that don't have the financial capability to pay what our fees are, and we will subsidise and give them a scholarship if we believe that they have potential to make it one day. But that's just the reality for our sport. Unfortunately, we are severely lacking and falling behind other codes when it comes to government investment, which I guess drives the costs of running clubs, keeping going, looking after facilities, developing facilities, and that all gets passed on to the consumer. So when you break it down to how much training these kids get a week and how much game time, it's somewhere around the $10 an hour mark that they're essentially paying. But there are a lot of massive overheads for clubs to run. So it's in our club anyway, it's not a case of, you know, we've jacked the price up and we're doing other things with that money. That is generally the cost for us to run a program.
So, Simon, last one. It's a fascinating time in Australian football at the elite level. So Avondale, South Melbourne and Preston have put their hands up. They want to be part of the second tier that is scheduled to commence in 2025.
Yep.
In 2027, let's pick a year, 2027, are any of those clubs playing in what will then be the national competition? What we consider to be the A-League now, will the Melbourne Knights be playing in it? Will any of those clubs be representing Victoria, if you like, in a national competition?
I think some of them would like to, and I believe that some of them are capable. I think that where the hurdle is there is the block from, not necessarily Football Australia, but the A-Leagues, and the licence that would be protected there for the owners, where I think they've got some guarantees where they're guaranteed a spot in the A-League until a certain period of time. Yep. So I think until those obstacles are overcome, we won't be seeing any of those clubs in the top division.
Intriguing stuff, and it's sounds
really
like
interesting.
Some a challenging period. And you know what I get, because these conversations are almost identical to what basketball has gone through. Okay. So I can relate to it all and understand and appreciate the challenges. Tell me, when you guys, you talk about those junior development programs, ultimately, do you guys retain some sort of rights to those players that you develop? Like the transfer markets, there's astronomical amounts of money involved in that. Is that something that, as far as your strategies of revenue raising, is that part of your program as well?
It's very difficult. So back when the A-League had taken off, they kind of put in quite a few measures in place to make things a lot easier for them, which would allow them to take essentially any of our players for an absolute pittance, where if you were to do a breakdown on what it costs you to develop a player and what they can potentially take them for, you would never do it. You can, if you have a talented player at the senior level that's professionally contracted, potentially go down that path. But unfortunately, because at a younger age, they kind of get looked at by these A-League clubs, most players that have that sort of talent potential go at a younger age to these A-League club academies. So we end up not having that talent once they get to the age that you could potentially sell them in the transfer market.
There you go. Oh, yeah. There you go. I reckon there's another 20 minutes of a conversation in and around all of that too, Simon. But I bet there is. It's such a complicated issue. We appreciate the fact that there's things that you're not in a position to tell us right now, but it is a story that's, you know, developing, and it's interesting, and we'll continue to watch it.
Just quickly, if you were to put a percentage probability of
this
second tier national competition going ahead, what would be your percentage probability?
For the anticipated start date of this time, 2025, I'd give it about 40%.
So listen.
So you're saying there's a chance.
That's right. Yeah, Simon, I know you're in the middle of a competition and it's tough in the Victorian NPL. I know you blokes are looking to build on what you've already started with this season, mid-table, and I know that's not where you want to be. We wish all the very best for the rest of the season, and appreciate you kind of giving us a sense of where we're at right now. We appreciate your time.
No, thanks a lot, Kai. Thanks for having me on.
Good on you.
Well done, Simon.
Simon Pinchich, Melbourne Knights president. Not mucking around, no messing.
Very well spoken, very articulate across the issues, and seemed very pragmatic and understanding of both sides. So
no smoke and windows behind the mirrors.
I wouldn't have thought so.
Simon, I don't think.
I thought he handled it very well and understood the challenges, and they've come to a pragmatic decision. I think I think the probability of happening, he's saying 40, I think he's being a bit generous.
Do you really?
I do, the way he's speaking.
Well, if anyone knows more about it than we do and is in a position to tell us more than Simon could, he's clearly got some privileged information. He's not in a position to breach at the moment. If anyone's got any more privileged information on any of that you want to share with us, 1-300-736-736.
They're pretty straight to the word. They don't talk a lot of smoke and shadows behind the windows.